Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 19, and I am Libya, your host. And this week, we are breaking away from the West Wing for a week. Next week will be part two of that podcast. This week, we are doing a regular podcast because we have a lot of new shows that premiered and some continuing shows we want to take a look at. And this week, I have two returning guests.
This is Allison from Los Angeles.
And this is Ronnie from Las Vegas.
Yay, Ronnie. I'm glad you called in.
It's good to be in the house. Not literally, though.
All right. This week, we have a couple of news items. Since we are starting to come up on the fall, the shows are starting to film and things are changing. One thing is that it's been announced that Amber Tamblyn is joining the cast of House as a radical, brilliant medical student. And, of course, House finds her fascinating. And even though she's a medical student and should not be practicing medicine yet, for some reason, House likes her and takes her in. So I'm not sure how I feel about that, because I like, what's weird is I really liked Amber Tamblyn on Joan of Arcadia. I thought she was great. But I haven't really liked her in anything else. So, I don't know.
Well, maybe she'll surprise you again.
That's true. I mean, I know she has the potential for me to like her, but it's hard. I saw her as like the timid kind of high school student, but as a crazy brilliant medical student. Let's see if she's got the acting chops. I'll be interested. The other piece of news I have is there's a bunch of news sites who are running a story about Torchwood casting for the new season that's going to be on Starz. And I know that when I read the casting sheet, I was like, this seems odd. Because
you had the reaction that I had.
The thing is, it's coming out that it's fake.
That's what I heard. First of all, I thought it was a little odd because all the characters were American. They were supposed to be CIA, and it just didn't feel like Torchwood.
The thing is, the first character that they tell you is this guy named Rex, and on paper he sounds exactly like Jack, except he's not immortal. I was like, wait a minute, why would you have two characters who are the same? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, his name was Rex. Like, Rex is not your lawyer. That's the first clue. And they describe him as kind of like Jack, almost exactly. And then they have this woman character, I can't remember her name, but she's in love with Rex. And I was like, she's Tosh? Really? Like, it sounds a little weird. And then there's the villain named Oswald Jones. And I was like, first of all, why are we having another Jones right after Yanto? That makes no sense. Mm-hmm. And Oswald. Right. And he's the villain for the series. And I was like, okay, is he some sort of alien or whatever? And they're like, oh, no, he's a pedophile. And I'm like, what?
That kind of stood out for me.
I was like, since when does Torchwood fight pedophiles? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, fortunately, like you said, it turns out to be from another show, so this is not having anything to do with Torchwood.
Yeah, but the thing that trips me out is how many news sources carried the story before anybody figured out it wasn't real.
I saw about four.
I saw more than that.
Did you?
Yeah, and Asiello, who usually gets the stuff right, he reported it too. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, did you ever watch Torchwood? Like, if I had ever seen Torchwood, if I saw that casting sheet, my first thought would have been, let me go find out if this is true or not before I reported it.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like a genuine casting sheet, but it does not look like it has anything to do with Torchwood.
Right.
So,
I thought that was a bit odd. And the last piece of news is they had a new casting thing for the event, which I didn't particularly care about who was cast, but I heard a little bit about the event, but I didn't know that the whole plot was so hush-hush. Like, they're not talking about it at all. And then they had a link to the trailer, which I just watched, and Allison watched it with me. And the trailer is kind of exciting. It doesn't tell you what the event is.
Tells you what it's not.
It does tell you what it's not, and what it's not is actually pretty exciting and looks like it'd be a series on its own, which is kind of the point. But it has Blair Underwood as the president, and I was like, all right, I can buy that. Well, I really like Blair Underwood, so
yes,
that works for me. And
The cast looked really solid. Tony Todd is in that as a general. Looks like they have the Magister as the head of the CIA. It looked very solid casting.
Yeah, and I'm excited. I mean, I don't know what it's about, but I'm definitely going to watch the pilot.
Yeah.
And I had just been talking a couple weeks ago that there weren't any new shows coming up that I was excited about for the fall, and I think I just found my show. You know, I'm now officially excited about the event. So
yeah, I just hope it doesn't turn into Flash Forward.
Well,
Flash Forward had a really exciting trailer for it, and the pilot episode was really good, and then it immediately just nosedived after that.
It became very mediocre. But also with Flash Forward, it had Fiennes, who for some reason thought he was playing a wooden just block of cheese or something. I don't know what he thought he was playing, but he gave that performance nothing.
Nothing at all.
And
it was a phoned-in performance.
Oh, really, definitely. And I was just like, why? I didn't care about him or his wife or anything. But I have to say, the caliber of actor on the event is like two steps up versus Flash Forward. I like some of the people on Flash Forward, but just looking at the cast as a whole, the event looks like they're taking it up a notch. Mm-hmm. So
For me, the Flash Forward, I didn't care about anybody. So I think I made three episodes.
I actually tried to make it longer, and
I actually got through the entire series. And
Well,
I know I should get an award for that. It's some kind of a medal. But it started to improve towards the end, and it had a great cliffhanger finale. But by that time, I think, you know, there was nobody else watching it except me and maybe the relatives of the people in the show. So there really wasn't any chance of this thing getting picked up again. It was just too little too late.
You have news.
Yes, I do. You know, there's all kinds of talk that's going on around The Hobbit and the various rumors and things. And the thing that I've heard most recently, as a piece of news, but it could just be bits from the rumor mill, because I happen to like it, but I know a lot of other people who are kind of going, huh? Is that the actor who is now being talked about as the most likely choice for the role of Bilbo Baggins is Sylvester McCoy, who played the Seventh Doctor on Doctor Who.
I'm shaking my head in silence over here.
See, I think he'd actually be a great choice because he's not very different in terms of physical type from Ian Holm, who played Bilbo in Lord of the Rings. And he's a little bit old for he's about a decade older than the character ought to be. But I don't think that that's really a huge difference. My reason for kind of questioning the piece of news is that I really would be surprised if they would go with a TV actor, someone who's known primarily for TV and for stage work, rather than someone who's a name in the movies.
And also, he's only known for TV in England. Like, Americans have no idea who he is.
No, it's because it's Doctor Who. Now, of course, they primarily choose British actors, not exclusively, obviously, but they tend to lean toward that, so that may be something in his favor. But it just seems like the rest of the casting they've done for Lord of the Rings have been big name actors. It's been people who at least had, you know, silver screen cred, and you really don't get that with McCoy. So as much as I would actually like to see him in the role because I think he's appropriate for it, I kind of question how valid this piece of news is.
Yeah, I'm gonna call that as it doesn't sound true to me. It sounds like a rumor.
Sort of wishful thinking from fans.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It could be true, it could be not. I'm kind of leaning toward not, although I would like it if they did it.
All right, so let's get on to the shows. The first show we have up is True Blood. And this week, I think it's like episode 4? I want to say it's episode 4. And basically, it's a lot of Bill has now gone to the dark side, and Eric is now being framed for the V. And I have to say, in the whole Eric storyline, I like the fact that Lafayette's trying to sell his product, and he gets in a very bad situation, and Eric is just there. I was like...
His hero.
And the look on Lafayette's face when Eric, you know, comes in and swoops in and saves the day is like, oh, that's my man. You know, and I was like, that's a little strange, but okay.
Well, you know, Eric tends to really get attached to certain people, and I got the impression from the very beginning that he didn't just find Lafayette useful. He actually liked him. And I think the car kind of bears that out, because there's really no reason for him to do that other than the fact that he just wanted to do something nice. And I think he's just kind of keeping an eye on Lafayette because he does like him. He's one of those humans who he kind of gets attached to.
I like that idea because I do like their chemistry. I like their scenes together. Oh, yeah. They're really a lot of fun. And I like the fact that Lafayette always plays like he's always annoyed when Eric shows up, but then he gets a smile and he's like, oh, Eric cares about me. So I kind of like that. And then, of course, he does his little flying thing and gets out of there because Pam is under attack. And I like the fact that he didn't even hesitate.
No. She's well, that's his child. You know, the Magister put it very succinctly. He said, you know, there's nothing worse than watching your child in pain. And that was his rationale for torturing her and for putting her in a position of possibly being killed, because that is Eric's child, and he will feel that connection with her to want to protect her. Yeah.
And that is, and I liked how they lied together. They were just looking at each other, and it was Bill. Yes, it was Bill.
Bill, absolutely. Right, that's the ticket, Bill.
And man, they gave him up quick. That was fantastic.
It's not like there's any love lost.
No, there's not. And Bill totally gave them up. So, you know, whatever. Everyone's just throwing each other under the bus. And it's like whoever gets killed first, you know. And I don't know, what the heck was Suki? Oh, Suki was getting turned into a biker chick.
Yeah. Complete with the tattoos and the goth hairdo and all of that.
I don't really care.
So it's not really her look.
The only thing is, I do like where the werewolf storyline is going, and Alicent is, oh my god, that man should take his shirt off all the time.
Oh, it should be a requirement.
He should never have to wear a shirt.
Man. Oh my.
I like the scene where he goes in with the werewolves, and that whole werewolf den was kind of interesting, and I liked how they were doing the whole, you know, I can read your mind, and I think it was last week's episode, was it last week or... Yeah, it wasn't last week, but the week before, they had the episode where he was like, can you really read my mind? And she goes, yeah.
Yes, I can.
But she's like, it's more useful in a crowded room, which they totally did in this episode. Yeah. And I was like, oh, nice. They actually used Suki's ability to their advantage this week, which is the first time they've done that in a while. So I like that. The biker chick look just didn't work, and then her doing the shots, I was like, whatever, man. Like, whenever Suki's trying to be cool, it just makes me roll my eyes. But I did like finding out that the reason that the werewolves are actually doing the bidding of the vamps is because he's feeding them.
Yeah, the V.
Yeah, and also, it gives the vampire a connection over the werewolves. It actually gives him power over them.
Oh, exactly.
And I'm
he's their pusher.
Well, he's their pusher, but also just in the blood, anyone who drinks his blood, he knows where they are at all times. And I'm like, are they aware of how much power he actually has over them at this point?
They don't look like they're aware of much, actually. They don't look like the sharpest pencils in the box.
Not at all. Oh, and then the other storyline with Tara, thank you with the T, is her and her super, super evil boyfriend. And I want... Peter hasn't seen the episode yet, and I want to do the dance of I told you so for him, because he was we were having this discussion a couple weeks ago, and he was like, oh, I like Tara's boyfriend, he's kind of cool. And I was like, I think he's evil. And he's like, no, he's just a vampire and they're a really cute couple. I was like, nah, I'm getting this feeling he's
evil. Adorable. They're just cute as hell together. And I was like, especially when he ties her up
exactly and puts duct tape on her mouth. I was kind of like, no, I think he's evil. And then we get to this episode, and I was like, he's evil. Yes.
Well, you knew there was something wrong with him the very first time we see him, or see his feet, really. He's breaking into Bill's house and looking for information. And then the next time we see him, he's showing a severed head to Jessica. So you get the idea this is not one of the nicest guys.
Which was my clue that he was evil.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of funny. Anyway, I think the thing that's scary about him is I think he really does like Tara. I think that's...
Well, he's a stalker. I mean, he's got that completely screwed up idea of what a relationship entails. And so I think that you've got this situation between them where he really is kind of obsessed. I don't even want to say in love, because I don't know if he understands what that is, but he is obsessed with her.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what actually makes it creepier.
Mm-hmm.
The look of absolute terror on Tara's face is just like... Man, she's just getting the raw end of a bunch of deals. She's in the middle of her whole suicide watch, and my life just really sucks. Just want to end it all. Her
boyfriend just got a bullet in the brain.
Yeah, and the first guy she meets on her rebound is a freaking killer, a serial killer, obsessive stalker. Yeah, it's just crazy. She is not having a good day.
No, not having a good year.
And then I was thinking, when we saw where he took her, I was like, oh... this is where Bill's being held. I was like, well, maybe Bill will take care of her. And then you get the preview, to the end of the
episode.
I didn't see the preview, so I don't know about the preview.
Alrighty.
But what I do know is you get to the end of the episode, and Bill is, like, munching on some girl. And I was like, yeah, I don't know if he's going to help Tara out very much. And he felt that Suki was in danger, and he totally didn't go.
Well, I think what Bill is doing is playing a long game. And that he wants badly to get rid of Lorena. And he wants to protect Suki. And I think his idea of protecting her is to keep as much distance between himself and Suki right now as possible until this thing is over and he can collect on getting Lorena offed. And I think that's what he's kind of working toward. And there may be something even more than that he's doing. But I think that's basically he's just kind of laying low and refusing to do what you'd expect him to do normally, which is, you know, be heroic and help Suki and you know, help Tara. And instead, he's doing what the king would be pleased with.
I would agree with you on one point, which is I do believe he really wants Lorena killed.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely agree with that. Yeah. But I also get the feeling he's got this look of kind of desolation in his eyes where I kind of feel that maybe he has given up. A little bit. Like, I don't know if this is all just a long game. When he tells Suki that he's done and that he had deluded himself that they could have a relationship, I think he might believe that a little bit.
It's hard to tell at this point. I'm going to bet that he really does still care for and is still holding out for the possibility of a relationship, but he's not going to even attempt that so long as Lorena is around.
Right, that's a good way to get Suki killed. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that was pretty much True Blood. I thought it was a good episode this week. It wasn't, I mean, it wasn't as disturbing as him twisting the head around during sex, which I thought was just too much.
That was extremely strange. That was very disturbing.
That was a bit too much for last week. This week, they end up with just blood pooling out of a limo. Which, you know, bloody, but it's True Blood, so it's...
Yeah, you expect that.
You expect that. So I was like, all right, that's fine. But I think it was overall entertaining episode, and I like where they're going this season, so mm-hmm. Thumbs
Agreed.
Up.
Agreed.
The next show we have is Lie to Me. Ronnie, you want to comment?
I will comment. I actually really enjoyed this episode. What was good for me was that it was about the police officer who was shot at the beginning and ended up being paralyzed, and then they had to both figure out what happened and who shot him. And the way everything unfolded. Now, I know both of you have watched Lie to Me a lot longer. And so for me, I think it's only my fourth episode. So I'm still getting used to how it works. And so I think, I always think of it, oh, it's just going to try to find out about lying. So what I liked about this episode is also having to read this paralyzed man just with his eyes. And even Gillian, I think is the way you're saying your name. She said it's about reading people, not just about when they lie. So it kind of opened up my eyes to a larger, you know, a larger thing than just lying.
Yeah, that's the thing about Lightman. He reads everything on your face. It doesn't have to be whether you're lying or not. He can read if you don't like a person. He can read if you're happy, if you're sad, if you're uncomfortable, all that. So, yeah, and that's the science that I like when you watch the show. You get to learn that science and pick up little clues if people are uncomfortable, if people, you know, are trying to avoid you, any of those things. And I think that's fascinating. I think you should go back and watch season one because they give much more detailed lessons in the first season. In second season they kind of figure you already know it, so they don't really go into it as much. But first season they are very good with breaking everything down mm-hmm. for you.
I'll have to do that. I think that the first season it was stronger than the second. I like the idea behind this episode. I didn't think the execution was as strong as it could have been, and I'm finding Tim Roth's performance to be more and more affected, whereas his character is really out there. He's flamboyant, but it just seems forced this year somehow. The whole relationship with the blonde that was going on in the episode really, it just felt like it was being forcibly shoehorned in the show, too. But still, it feels like, you know, some executive somewhere made the decision that we need more sex in this show. Bring in a sexy blonde. And it just felt like, why am I watching this? Why is this being forced on me in the show?
I actually have to agree with you on one point, which is this was actually not one of the best episodes of Lie to Me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think the case was... I did like the fact that he had to put together what happened with very little information.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty cool. But the fact that the only thing we are reading is dilation of the eyes, for Lightman, that's almost child's play. I mean, he usually is reading 20 different things on a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like, with this, it felt like he was almost guessing. Because, I mean, he saw the eyes dilate, but he didn't know. He was taking that as a yes, but, you know, it was a little vague. It felt very imprecise.
Mm-hmm.
He's usually much more precise with his diagnosis of people and how he breaks stuff down. And just having one thing to look at is not very much for him.
I mean, it really could mean almost anything. The only part that I really liked was the bit at the end when he's helping the wife say goodbye, the husband say goodbye.
That was excellent.
And I liked that partly because he explained later he wasn't so much reading him as he was reading her.
Right.
And, you know, because he was giving her that peace that she was looking forward to have, that final connection with her husband. So I could see him, you know, doing that, reading her, because like you said, this guy can dilate his eyes. That's the extent of his expressions. There's not a whole lot of information to be had from that.
Right.
But see, but the thing is, but what I liked is from that, he was able to build this whole case, first with the kids, then with the different cops, you know what I mean? And even how at the, you know, by the end, the cops drag his daughter into what was going on. So mm-hmm. I liked, you know, I mean, it's like you said, if it was only about just the eye dilation, that would be one thing.
I did build so much from that.
I did
like them building the case. But that moment where, at first I thought the whole daughter thing was like fake, but then, you know, when he gets her out of there, I was like, oh no, they really took his daughter. Yeah. I was like, Lightman's about to lose his mind. And he pretty much did. That's one thing you don't do. You don't touch his daughter. Mm-hmm. Touch his daughter, we got problems. And I thought that was really good. I mean, cops figure they can intimidate anybody. And they're used to people just bowing to them. But I'm like, don't cops realize that you can't intimidate rich people that way? Like, Lightman's a freaking millionaire.
Rich connected people.
Right, rich connected
people. Deeply politically connected. That's been established.
Right, and I'm like, rich connected people, as you say, are not intimidated by city-level cops at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, did you not research this guy before you decided to intimidate him? I mean, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
To this point, all they've been intimidating were drug dealers and
mm-hmm. which they can easily get away with.
You can get away with that, but you start trying to intimidate millionaires, it doesn't work. So I actually just thought
that would be Cop 101,
right.
You know, one of the things they tell you first.
Right. I just thought that they were just, I thought they were just very stupid cops.
Yeah.
On top of it, because now, instead of being a mediocre case that he's kind of motivated on, now you got the FBI on you and you got all this other stuff, and it just blows up at that point. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I didn't give them much intelligent credit. But I did like the emotional thing going on with him and his daughter and all of that. That was good. But, yeah, I just found him reading the dilation of the eyes a little uninteresting.
It was actually
one of the few times. What do you guys think of the end where, you know, sort of this whole thing with the blonde and now that she's going to be paying, you know, I mean, she set up the loan.
Oh, I really don't like that at all.
Not at all.
I did. That seemed like a weird twist to go in that direction.
Well, it seemed like a way of forcing her into the show. And I kept thinking, why? What's empty space does she fill? You know, what void does she fill in this show? And I can't find one. It's they just kind of shoehorned sex into the series.
Well, I mean, they didn't imply that the two of them were actually going to have sex.
Well,
but
she's going to try. I mean, they did imply that
she is attracted to him, but I guess it's going to be counter to it's the whole thing is Lightman and Foster have this whole tension, but they are the moonlighting couple, and you know you can't have them together too soon, so you have to throw up all these crazy obstacles. And I just feel like she's one more obstacle that they're going to throw up, but I find her a very uninteresting one. If you're going to throw up obstacles, at least make it interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
So, it was an okay episode, a lot of me. You liked it, which is great, but
yes.
When you say that, I'm like, go back and see season one.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to. I will take you up on that.
All right, the next show we're going to talk about is The Good Guys, and this week's episode is all about they're trying to recover a stolen car, though I think technically they weren't supposed to be doing that.
No, they were actually clearing out the evidence room. They were supposed to be sorting
right,
the evidence
locker.
Yeah.
Right.
And it kind of got away from them.
as each episode tends to. I like the fact that Stark was very much about, you know, he wanted to solve old cases. And
By planting evidence,
which I'm sure is quite illegal. But that's the only way in his mind that it would actually get the police department moving on an old case. So, I mean, that's what he did. And it was crazy. It's like their suspect has been dead for 4 years. Oops. So that was all good shenanigans. It was good fun. I mean,
See, that's what I love about the show is that it's just good fun. You know, I mean, it's like I love the writing because the way that they tie the different things together. And of course, you know, it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't stand in the real world. But when I watch The Good Guys, I don't want the real world. I just want more of Stark. You know?
Yeah,
he is fantastic. Him and his mustache are fantastic.
Oh my gosh! And the fact that he's hitting on his partner's ex-girlfriend's mother.
Mother. Oh my god.
I know that was like, come on, you know, have a little decency somewhere.
Yeah, his charm, he has a very special type of charm, which seems to work on whoever he's actually aiming it at. It's really bizarre. It's like his superpower. I don't know how
it understand works. It at all. But, oh, God. Yeah, it was great. I loved the whole scene when they go to the locker and they're trying to open it up and look for evidence inside and they find the body in there.
Right.
That was great, the whole explosion thing and how they got out. But I thought everything that they put together in the story was just hilarious.
Well, the fact that they managed to connect everything, it was so crazy. Like, that's what I love about the show, is they start off with this little thing, and it ends up being this huge thing, and they all connect in the most bizarre way. And it was kind of like, well, you know, I'm sure that us planting the evidence at your girlfriend's mom's house is not going to lead the criminals back to her house at all. And they're all there. All the criminals are there. She's taken hostage. It's just all these. And then they blow
drives
a hole through the side of her house.
Drives a car through the side of the house. It was awesome. After the car had been shot up.
Right.
So it's.
So yes, they returned her car in multiple pieces and totaled the front of her house. Thank you. I should have never called this in. She was better off not calling it in.
I just love the mother's thing is they're tied up in the living room. She's going, I could be in Boca Raton.
That's a good point.
And I like the fact that the older brother just accidentally shot the other brother. It was a complete accident.
Just went off. You know.
He was like, right. Be careful how you carry that gun or you don't point that gun at me. He's like, I won't. And he like just kind of reaches behind his arm and accidentally pulls the trigger and kills his brother. And he's like, oops.
What I love is, you know, he doesn't just die. He also just falls conveniently into his little carrying case. So,
right.
You know, oh, that's nice. Just tuck him in, close the lid.
Done. And then
very convenient, you know?
Yeah, and he's afraid to tell the younger brother, yeah, accidentally killed our older brother. So, yeah, the Guatemalans killed him. He was like, you know how many Guatemalans I tried? I busted windows. He was so
I haven't been in a Guatemalan restaurant for a year.
All of that was great. Then they have a fight. But the thing that's funny is the brothers are fighting like brothers. They have freaking automatic weapons.
Great.
They put down their automatic
and
weapons and just wrestle each other. It's fantastic.
Right.
All of that was just really, really good. That show just makes me laugh. Like, so far, I mean, some of the stories have been a little less than others, but I think consistently, the show is just hilarious. Mm-hmm. I just laugh through the whole thing, and I just like the way they're tying everything together. I haven't hit a clunker yet.
No.
I don't think.
No, so far it's all been strong.
All right.
I agree as well.
I'm going to move on now to White Collar premiere, which I find sadly neither one of you have watched. You need to watch White Collar. My plug for all of you to watch White Collar is the lead of the show is gorgeous.
And well, that's all I need.
He is quite gorgeous, and he is a con man. The premise of the show, if you don't know, is basically he's like one of the high-end thieves. He's one of those guys who makes counterfeit whatever, replaces it in a museum, and steals the painting off a wall. Like, he does copies of, like, bearer bonds and switches them out. And so he's got millions of dollars, and he's been working... Well, not now he doesn't, but he's been working as a criminal for several years. And the
So it's like Hustle with one guy.
But with one guy, right. And okay. He finally gets caught by this FBI agent. And he gets sent to prison for 4 years because they only catch him on like one thing. Mm-hmm. Out of all the things he's done, they catch him for one thing. And they send him to prison for 4 years. And a month before he's supposed to get out, he breaks out of prison because he got... Oh, his girlfriend... came to him and told him something, and you don't know what it is, and she just disappears. Hmm. And so he breaks out of prison. Instead of waiting that month, he thinks like her life's in danger or whatever, and he breaks out of prison to try to find her, and the guy who caught him immediately went back and watched the footage and realized, okay, why did he break out a month? It doesn't make sense. Realizes he's connected to the girlfriend and catches him again within like 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And once he finds out why he broke out, the guy feels bad for him, and he's like, all right, because they were going to send him back to prison for another 4 years. So he suggests, why don't you have him work for us, for the FBI, and he'll have to wear an anklet, so that they know where he is at all times.
Tracking
device. Yeah. And so he's basically a consultant for the FBI. But what's hilarious is when they go out on cases and stuff, he like went into a Cracker Jack box and got one of those fake... badges.
Mm-hmm.
So when they pull out the other guy pulls out his FBI badge, he pulls out his little cartoon one. It's hilarious.
Oh my gosh.
It's really fun show. It's like each week they're trying to catch like an art thief or a bank thief or some kind of thief.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, the pretty boy con artist, his name is Neil Caffrey. And his job is to figure out either how they're going to rob someplace or how they did rob it. And then the FBI go in and they catch the guy. And because he's so good at it, the FBI guy now has like a 99% clearance rate. So he's been doing really well. But the problem is the reason that Caffrey took the deal was to find his girlfriend. So mm-hmm. Now that he's out, he's like in his spare time trying to look for the girlfriend. And it's just
so that's the continuing arc through the series?
That was through season one. At the end of season one, she gets blowed up.
Ooh.
Except that you realize...
I hate when that happens.
But you realize, well, people suspect, everyone suspects that they were actually trying to kill Neil.
Mm-hmm.
So, season two just premiered this week. And because Neil was technically trying to get away... Well, he actually cut a deal with this other FBI guy. And that guy was actually crooked. And so, he actually kept no files. So even though he made a deal with this guy to get out of the program and leave, it looks like he was trying to escape.
Mm-hmm.
So they put him back in prison. They almost fired the FBI dude. His name's Peter. They almost fired him. And so the beginning of the season is Peter getting his badge back, getting Neil back out of prison, and then they're kind of getting the team back together.
Mm-hmm.
What's cool about Neil also is that he has a sidekick guy who's also a criminal, and he doesn't trust cops. So he doesn't like to be around when other cops are around. Though after season one, he kind of trusts Peter, who works for the FBI. He trusts him a little bit because he knows that he cares about Neil a lot. Mm-hmm. So the two of them are united in their friendship. So his name is Mozzie, and he's played by this actor. I know you've seen him before. He was a guy in Stargate who wrote the script of that fake Stargate. Wormhole Extreme.
Oh,
he was the writer guy.
Okay.
from that. But yeah, he plays the sidekick for Neil, and whenever Neil needs, because his anklet will only let him go to certain places, and he knows if he goes there, the FBI will know he's been there.
Okay.
So if he needs something done, he'll send Mozzie to go do it, and then they'll plot and they'll figure stuff out. And I have to say, Neil is really, really charming.
Mm-hmm.
He does a really good job with being charming and getting his way without being unlikable. And he is arrogant, but he's more arrogant about his intelligence and his ability to crack safes and stuff. He's very proud of that. Not so much, I'm proud that I look good. You know, that's not his thing. But, so it's kind of sexy because Neil's always flirting with people. And Peter is the FBI agent. He's married and, I can't think of her name. And she's really pretty. And they have, like, this weird kind of family unit that they've let Neil in on. So, like, Neil will be at their house and have dinner with them and hang out. And they really have become a unit. And I really like it. It's a really fun. It's not, like, good guys silly fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it does have drama in it, so there will be some angst in there. But for the most part, it's kind of To Catch a Thief. It's one of those kind of shows.
What channel is it on?
It's on USA. So, I mean,
well, I'm going to try to check it out. Sounds good.
Yeah, and it's on, like, USA has done some pretty good shows, I think. I'd say I watched.
Yeah, they've got a good track record, actually.
Yeah. Except
they really do.
Except for Covert Affairs.
Oh, I missed that.
Let's not go there.
I was very much... The only thing I'm going to say negative about it, because I actually haven't seen it. I downloaded it to watch it on the theory that I shouldn't rag a show without giving it a shot. But the preview looked awful. And then Peter watched it, and he was like, it's a C-. And I was like, I don't need to waste my time. Because I really didn't think it was going to be any good anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So no one has come back and said, no, it's great. You should totally check it out. And if you guys out there disagree, someone email me and tell me why I should be watching Covert Affairs. Okay. The next show we're going to talk about is Psych. Psych had its premiere of season 4, I believe. And it's on the heels of a very dramatic finale from last season, which was the Ying or Yang, and I forget which one it is, killer who basically had Juliet hanging off the side of a clock tower, and she almost got killed, and it freaked her out. So now she's lost her mojo, and she's sitting around doing, like, she's not being a traffic cop precisely, she's doing desk work, and she's staying away from real police work, and everyone in the episode is trying to get her back. So they keep giving her stuff and trying to pick her brain to get her excited about real police work again. What'd you think, Ronnie?
You know what? I loved it. Because I don't watch Psych all that often. You know, I mean, I catch it here and there, and I need to start watching it regularly because it's just so funny in the way that they pull the different gags together. Like, I love their assistant who they fired after the first day.
Yeah.
Just his whole thing. He was amazing. And then they kept on having these different Asian stereotypes that they have to come back to him. It's like, I don't know about gangs. It's like, but you're Asian, you know? And the whole Panda Express, you know, I thought that was really cool how they worked that in throughout the show.
I like their whole conversation when they kept asking him, the assistant, all these specifically Asian things. And he's like, I grew up in wherever he grew up. And then I like the fact that they're like, well, that's not really racist. And his partner's like, yeah, a little bit racist. Gus and Sean are fantastic. And I like, my favorite thing about this show is it's two guys who met each other in kindergarten and grew up together and are still partners and are still best friends. And they have their own language and their own, it's almost like twin language.
Hmm.
The way that they communicate, and the thing that's interesting is for the last three seasons, Sean's dad, who actually made him into his faux psychic self, basically made him be able to observe everything, because his father was basically training him as a child to be a cop.
Mm-hmm.
And because of all the training, of course, he hates cops and he doesn't want to be a cop. He thinks the discipline's too crazy, but because of that, he's really good at what he does. And for the last three seasons, the dad has been at home, retired, and whenever they need his help, he'll either irritate them or give them advice. He's just been kind of side story. And what they did this season is they actually brought him in to the police force. They unretired him. And now he's actually interacting with everyone. Hmm. But what's weird is they now gave him authority over Sean, which is... Because they figure... Their problem with the last couple of seasons is that Sean has basically been able to do whatever the heck he wants and has basically run over the police department and...
So they've given him someone that he can't just bowl over.
Right. So they're like, okay, your dad is now in charge of all our consultant cases, which he falls under. Mm-hmm. So they're like, if you want to be on the case, your dad has to be able to give it to you. But the problem is, if his father figures out that the case is dangerous, he won't assign him to it because he's like, yeah, it's too dangerous for you. He's like, are you kidding me? I worked these cases for 3 years before you showed up. He's like, yeah, but I thought it was too dangerous for you. So now he's got an overprotective father who won't let him work cases. And so it's kind of...
And you've got a 10 o'clock curfew, young man.
But at the same time, his dad, I love the whole conversation about the Easter egg hunt where he's still found two. Oh, my God. That was amazing.
Well, he was like, he was saying that his father was always made stuff too hard for him. He was like that Easter egg hunt. He was like, oh, I think that Easter egg hunt was reasonable. He was like, Dad, you took the eggs and you buried them throughout the yard. And he was like, yes, but the moved soil was how you're supposed to know where I buried them. He's like, yes, but you can't cover them in camouflage. He was like, I wasn't going to make it easy for you. And he was like, I took 3 weeks finding all the eggs. And he's like, no one else does that. And then his dad is like, they finished the argument, and then his dad is like, there were two eggs you never found.
I know. Holy crap. Who thinks that up, you know? Oh,
and I was like, you guys are crazy. And it's just, and at the beginning of the episodes, they always show little Sean and little Gus, where you get to see them as children. And see all the crazy stuff they got up to when they were kids. What's funny is, right before the premiere, I went back and watched a couple episodes from season one, and the kid that they have playing Gus actually changes, I think, twice. The child that they have playing him.
Well, they start to grow out of being.
Well, the thing is, they have kept the same Sean.
Oh, have they?
And going back to watch first season, that Sean is like 7. He's like 7 or 8 years old. He's absolutely adorable. And now in season 4, he's like 12 or 13. And he's still a good-looking kid. I'm not saying he's not. Mm. But he doesn't have that super, super adorable look because he's growing up.
Well, they grow out of that.
They do grow out of that. And but it's still interesting. I still like the flashbacks. I still like the crazy stuff his father used to have him do when he was a kid. Because, yeah, his father was crazy. I was like, this is exactly why your son is crazy, because you're crazy. I like this week's... And this week's episode was pretty good. It was a good premiere. The father trying to stop them from investigating a Chinese mafia. So it was the Golden Dragons versus some other dragons. It was two dragons. One was Golden Dragons and then there was another dragon. And it was almost going to be war between them. Oh, and what was great... was Sean took one class of wushu and he thought that meant he knew karate.
Oh my gosh, that was amazing.
So it's like every time they go up against a bad guy, he tries to fight them because he thinks he can now. And
I loved Gus, how like Gus got him in to be able to take the class because it was a class for children. So he wasn't supposed to be able to take it. And he used the race card. And he got the guy behind the counter, like, even, like, sort of discriminated against him about the drinking fountain. I thought it was wonderful how it, you know, just to get him in the class, he had to, like, set this guy up, you know?
All of that was really good. And they had some good martial arts going on in there because it was a kidnapping. It was a faux kidnapping, which turns into a real kidnapping. And every fight scene that they have, Sean just basically gets his butt kicked. Because everyone else in the episode can really fight. Mm-hmm. And they had some really good karate scenes going on, and it was really, really entertaining. And I like the fact that when Sean is fighting the guy, and it's a big karate fight, and Gus could help him, but Gus is like, yeah, how you doing over there? You're all right? He's like, I'm trying to wake up the other good karate guy, because there's another guy who's really good, but he was knocked out, so he kept splashing water on the guy. And he's like, come on, wake up. Because he wasn't going to fight. He was like, I know I can't fight.
I'm not getting myself into it, you know?
Yeah, and it was great because, of course, the episode starts off with a flashback of them being beaten up by bullies and how Sean pushed Gus forward talking about, oh, you took 3 lessons. He knows karate. He was like, I took 2 classes in Wushu. He's like, yes, you know more than them. Go ahead, fight them. So it was like them as kids, and Gus learned his lesson. Gus is like, yeah, I'm not doing that again. Yeah, so it was a good episode. It was they got Juliet back on the force. She got pulled back into the cases, which was, you know, where they were going. And the Romeo and Juliet story of the golden dragons versus the other dragons, they made lots of references because the whole faux kidnapping was about the son and the daughter of the opposing gangs fall in love, mm-hmm. and it's Romeo and Juliet basically. But then they make references to West Side Story and all these other yeah. things. And he's like, "Are we the Sharks?" No, he goes, "What is it? What in the Sharks?
Oh, how
the
is
Jets.
It?
The Jets." He goes, "Are we the no?" But instead of saying the Jets and the Sharks, he's like the Jets and the Fish or something.
Something completely off. Yeah,
it was something that wasn't right. And his dad was like, "It's the Sharks," and it's they make great references. And I like the fact that Sean is like totally uneducated and totally saying he says everything wrong whenever he's making a reference, and it's a really it's a literary or an intelligent reference. He gets it wrong every time. Moving on to Burn Notice.
We're on a streak of shows I don't watch.
Oh, you didn't watch Burn Notice? Really?
No, I still haven't. I keep meaning to catch it because I know practically everyone I know has seen it and said it's fantastic. And I know you're really into it. And I keep meaning to, you know, download episodes so I can take a look, and I have not gotten around to it. It's one of those things on my list to do.
I have season 1 on my shelf. You can have it.
Oh, thank you.
There we go. All
right.
Done.
I've got no excuse to not see it now, see?
But it was another great episode as we see Jesse get pulled into the fold more and more. But what I liked about it was that they were interrogating the assassin.
Yeah.
Yes, to find out, you know, to understand more her role, because why she killed the guy that they needed to, you know, to get the information from. You know, but on the same side, then it was also interesting the case that they had, this guy who makes fake shoes, which was, you know, B was just in seventh heaven with all of the shoes that he had, like, in his apartment. But I guess somebody commissioned him, and at first we don't know what it is that they commissioned him about, and it turned out that there was an ancient sword that he made a duplicate of, not realizing he was. And then the person who hired him to do that was trying to kill him to keep him quiet. So they had to figure out how to get him from not being killed. And so it was interesting having this time. It was like a good balance of having the 2 different stories at the same time. You know, they kept going
That's
back
true.
And forth between them.
That is true. I really like the interrogation of the assassin, mainly because their first strategy bombs so much. It's like,
oh my God.
They basically were like, okay, we're gonna pretend that we're not the bad guys, that if you don't tell us, you know, what we want to know, we're going to hand you over to some really bad guys who are going to, you know, really, like, chop you up. And so they basically try to sell her that story, and she's like, fine, all right, let's do that. She's like, they're going to start chopping at my feet? That's cool. And she just starts banging her head on the table
until
her head was bloody, and she's like, so what are you going to do to me?
Okay, I mean, that's hardcore.
And I was just like, whoa. And so they get out of the room, and Michael was like, yeah, we made up a boogie monster for her, and she just kicked the boogie monster in the teeth. He's like, yeah, that strategy's not going to work. She's like, yeah, we're going to have to come up with something else for her. And actually, what it was pretty good. They basically trick her into thinking that her boss has betrayed her, so now she wants her. She figures she's gonna get. She knows that she's not gonna get out of that room alive. Mm-hmm. She already knows that. She's already resigned herself to that. That's why she doesn't care. She's like, whatever. But by them convincing her that her bosses, you know, stole all her money and betrayed her, makes her angry. So now she wants revenge. So she totally just gives up all the information. But it took a lot to get to that point. I mean, watching them go through all of that was really good. And Jesse is really starting to fit into the group because...
Not completely, because what I like, too, is the tensions between him and Michael. Because, you know, it's like, Michael, this is the way we're going to do it. And Jesse's like, no, bless, you know. And it took some convincing to get Jesse on the right track. So I like that there's a tension, that everybody just doesn't go along with what Michael says. That, you know, he's there to say, hey, you know, well, what about this? You know, and to give him, you know, a little bit of lift back.
That's true, because the gang, basically, at this point, unless Michael is absolutely wrong, they usually don't disagree with him at this point. I mean, because they've been together for 3 years, so they know how to trust each other. Yes. And adding Jesse to the mix, he doesn't know Michael that well, and doesn't, he trusts him to a degree, but he, Jesse, I get the impression that Jesse doesn't really trust anybody. So it's an uphill battle to get Jesse to trust Michael. So that is interesting. You're right. And then the case was, I like the fact that they give you this thief that you think is the bad guy, and you're following this guy, and then his car gets blown up, and they're like, yeah, maybe he wasn't the thief, you know? And then they, so then when they actually figure out who the thief is, they were like, yeah, I didn't see that coming. And I was like, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. I mean, yeah, they did a little switcheroo, and you don't figure out who the bad guy is until, actually, I figured it out before they revealed it based on a comment. It was the woman. It was like, she made some,
too.
Yeah, she was too eager to get them arrested. That was like, oh, right, it's her.
After that explosion at the dinner, that's when I figured it out. You know, like you said, she was a little bit too eager to get them arrested when that explosion went off.
Right. I was like, oh, it's her. Yeah, and I liked his whole how figuring out which fireman wasn't real, because they knew that the bad guy had escaped wearing a fireman's outfit. So Michael just starts yelling, help, help, and then he sees how many firemen turn to look at him, mm-hmm. except for the one that keeps going. He goes, never mind. And like, that was pretty good. I was like, nice. That was a good use right there. So yeah, I like that. That was a good episode, and the arc is moving forward, and the story moved forward. I think you're right. They did a very good mix. So thumbs up.
Thumbs up here as well.
All right, Eureka. We have two episodes to talk about, but it's fine because they kind of flow into each other.
Yeah.
So the,
they really do.
We have the premiere, and we have the second episode. Who wants to start?
Well, I will say that I'm actually new to Eureka. Cause the only reason that I actually tuned in, I've seen it before and was not terribly impressed. I think I've seen a total of 4 episodes in the past and just kind of went, it wasn't offensive, but it wasn't sterling. It wasn't must-see TV for me. And I watched because James Callis was in it.
Of course you did.
Of course I did. You know me. I would watch him read the phone book. You know, he'll do a Tide commercial. I'll have it on tape. You know, I mean, this is a given. But so I tuned in really just to watch him, and I figured, well, I'm going to probably, I DVR'd it, and I figured I'm just going to fast forward through his bits. I loved the show. It was great.
Yay!
I've become a new fan of Eureka. I want to go back and watch the episodes I missed.
That's
especially
fantastic.
The ones with Detective Andy, because he just cracks me up.
Well,
and
there's only a couple. There's
the
only
show.
But there's only a couple with him. Like,
yeah.
I think there's 2.
But I didn't know
maybe
where
one.
He came from. I thought he was just invented for this episode, and then I read something online that said, oh, Sheriff Andy's back, and I went, he's been on it before?
Yeah, he's great.
They've
really
had an
like
android
him.
On the show. So I went back and I looked to see, you know, what his character was about, and I thought, that's interesting. So yeah, there's stuff I've got to look up.
And, go ahead, Ron.
But I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. And I was just going to say, yeah, I loved how, you know, that that he figured out that they time traveled and how he deduced. That was great.
And you have particles in your hair that haven't been around since 1947.
The only thing I'm going to say about James Callis, because he's a fantastically smarmy character, is that his American accent's off. It bothers me.
I've heard worse. There's some accents that are really distracting, and his isn't bad enough to distract me.
It distracts me a little bit because he talks slow. And I think part of the reason he's talking so slow is to make sure it's precise.
Mm-hmm.
But it slows down his speech to where it's just a little distracting to me. I mean, I'm hoping that because he's added on, it looks like, as a cast member for the
yes.
rest of the season. So I'm hoping that that means that over the course it'll get better. Because, I mean, he's a great actor, so I'm not, like, knocking that or anything.
But I think he's got to get used to the accent. And he's actually got 2 things going on. Remember, he's not just speaking with an American accent, but they've also given him all these 1940s idioms
right.
to speak in. So it's going to take a little while for him to start to sound
and
natural.
That's cool. I mean, I'm fine with that. I just felt that I needed to mention it.
No, I'm glad you did, because I have it's it's almost there for me, but like you said, it just a tiny bit, you know what I mean? It's like, and I didn't know what it was. I'm glad you said it's kind of slow. Maybe that's what it is, but it just, and it's kind of a little bit too deep for me. It's like, I wonder if it feels a little bit too low.
Yeah, I was complaining. I was like, why can't he be British? I was like, Einstein was Austrian, and he was the other leader of Eureka. I don't understand why James Callis couldn't have been British.
Well, I think that the idea is that if he would have been working for Britain at the time, there was enough going on. I mean, if you know about the period, there's very little reason why an Austrian or German scientist, especially, you know, Jewish extraction, would definitely be in America at that time. But it would be weird to have a British one because they had such a terrible time after the war and would have really needed all their best people there. So what a Brit would be doing in England would be a little strange.
Or America, yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just, America. Yes, I also like his British accent, so I was just like,
yeah,
eh.
Well, I do too.
So,
it's sexy.
Here. Yeah, look, I was not a big fan of Baltar back in the day, but I was a fan of James Callis, so we'll leave it at that. I thought that the storyline was interesting. What's weird is because they've changed an alternate timeline, but since you haven't really seen the other Eureka...
I've seen a few episodes, so I kind of know. I know what the situation is and what's going on, well, sort of.
Right. It's a little... Well, the thing was great was in the premiere is they had a previously, which actually wasn't previously. Like, in the previously, when they had him break up with his girlfriend, that didn't happen on the show. So they actually had the breakup in the previously. I was
like, are you
kidding me? That's it's funny.
I didn't even catch that. Oh my god.
Yeah, because if you watch the end of last season, he's with her, and she goes on her trip. So she does leave. I remember
but they
that.
Don't have that.
But they don't actually have the breakup conversation. So
that's right.
I was kind of like, when did he break up with her? That didn't happen.
It did now.
And I actually think that's funny because I wasn't that invested in that relationship, so I was just like, I was highly amused that they broke up on a previously. But then now they got them back together in the alternate. I'm not.
Well, she's not an Eastwick anymore, so she can be on Eureka.
Well, I mean, okay. I'm a big fan of Carter and Allison's character. I want them together because that's the couple
they've been
hinting at that couple since season one, and they've been doing all kinds of stuff to block them. Like, literally, they changed the timeline already, actually.
That's the one thing, with the alternate timeline, I feel like, I almost like, let's not do that again. Can't we do something else? I mean, I enjoyed everything, but I'm kind of like, I don't want another alternate timeline, you know?
Well, the only thing about that alternate timeline was it was actually an alternate timeline that they actually changed back. So they were in an alternate timeline where Carter and Allison were together, and she was pregnant, and they were married, and all this other stuff, and they were super happy. And then they found out they were in the wrong timeline. And so they went back to the correct timeline, and that broke them up. Though, actually, Carter is from the alternate timeline.
Okay.
That's right.
Yes, he and Henry, who's the black guy, the two of them are from the alternate timeline, and they came to this timeline, which
is
the correct...
So switch between...
There wasn't a switch. It was they realized they were in the wrong timeline, and time and space started breaking up. And so they were the ones who actually controlled the machine that got the timeline back on track, and it transported both of them back to the right timeline. Except Henry's the only one who remembers it because he wiped Carter's memory.
Okay.
Yes.
But is that a different machine than the one that was used
Totally different.
So do you think that they'll bring back this other machine that he used so they can set this timeline right?
I don't remember what happened to it at the end.
Because this one obviously went...
Yeah, that one kind of blew up. Yeah.
And I don't remember at this point either.
I don't remember
what happened with the other one. Do you think that they're going
to
keep this alternate timeline for the rest of the season?
I mean, it's interesting. I think that we're going to reach a crisis point at some point because, I mean, you can't... How are they going to walk away from the possible angst of Allison having to leave...
Her now not autistic son.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that is perfect for good drama. But they're going to have to... It's going to have to be, like they said, the universe starting to unfold or blow up or something.
Their timeline is starting to unravel. Things are going wrong. And I think it either has to reach a point where things are... The timeline is actually collapsing on itself. Or that it gets out what they've done and they're going to be killed for it. One of those two has to happen. Maybe both. for it to reach such a head that they have to go back and change everything. Because really, how would they get Allison to
leave
back
her son.
And leave her son and exchange her deliberately for an autistic child?
Exactly. What were you gonna say?
Right, and she even, I was gonna say how she said that, you know, she had thought about going to ruin the machine herself. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how invested she is in this particular timeline. So, yeah, like you said, there's no way she's gonna do it without a huge fight or for a huge reason.
I mean, she's fighting for her child.
Right. One thing is, we're just, I think that we're gonna have to figure out, or they're gonna have to figure out what's gonna happen as far as no one knowing. Because I don't think that Henry can keep a secret from his wife now. Mm-hmm. Like, she's gonna know that that's not her husband, I think, relatively soon. I don't think you can convince me that you can go the whole season without the wife figuring out that Henry
is
not Henry.
There's too much that couples share together. There's a verbal shorthand that couples have when they communicate. And that's all gonna be missing on Henry's side. And I think she's gonna figure it out that something's wrong.
Right.
Something's up with him.
And I think that at least Carter can fake it with Tess a little bit because he has dated her for a year.
Mm-hmm.
So he has some frame of reference. The only thing that's weird is now in his head they've broken up and he's kind of over her because he wants to be with Allison.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's kind of like, she's moving in.
Gee, this would have been great a week ago.
He didn't know what the question was. You know, it's like, did I ask her to marry me? What's going on? And so finally, oh, it's just moving in. Okay.
Well, it's not just. That's still a big step. Yeah. But, I mean, he would rather be breaking up with her than moving in with her. Because that's now, how long do you live with somebody? He asked her to move in. So he's like, well, how long do I have to stay with her before I can be like, you know, yeah, this isn't working. You know, because that's pretty much where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
And Allison looks all heartbroken. That was very sad. I have to say, though, I mean, as I've been watching the season from season one all the way through now, the obstacles that they have put between Allison and Carter have actually been pretty good. Like, Stark was the competition for Carter for like a year, and then Stark wins, and she marries Stark, or almost marries Stark. And all of that really worked because Stark was a likable guy and he was gorgeous. So
yes,
you kind of were like, all right, I could totally see why she picks this other guy over Carter. He was smarter than Carter. He was better looking than Carter. He was just like, it was just like, yeah, Carter's going to lose that. and he had a history with Allison. So it was like,
that's what I was going to say. Yeah. The history. Yes.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, he's going to lose. So that actually worked for me, and I believed it. And then the next season, she's pregnant, and then he's dating Tess. So that's kind of a natural kind mm-hmm. of barrier. So I was like, all right, I'll buy that. And so this season kind of feels like, all right, we're finally going to know. So now it's like just when you think it's finally going to happen, we are in an alternate timeline. And all I say is, by the time the show ends, Allison and Carter better be together. That's all I gotta say, because I will feel like I've been cheated.
And you don't want the wrath, Olivia.
Well, I mean, I really enjoy it. And I have to say, other shows do a really bad job and a really cheap job of keeping the main two characters apart. And I have to say, this show has done, I think, a pretty good job to where I don't feel like it's cheap. I feel like it's earned.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the good thing. So I am totally looking forward to what the heck James Callis's character also, I have to say, I like, is the fact that he immediately went to prison, did not collect $200. because Carter was like, you were planning on leaving me in 47? He was like, well, yeah, sacrifices have to be made. He was like, yeah, my sacrifice? I don't think so.
Yeah, thank you for volunteering me for that sacrifice.
So I thought that was pretty good. And then, of course, he's already out of prison working and helping. So I think he's going to make a really good addition to the team.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. I like how they blended him in very well. Is there anything else you can think of?
That's kind of it. You know, other than, as someone new coming to the series, since I've had very limited experience with the show, I just thought that it was really, really well done. And it was a terrific way of bringing people in, like myself, who've really never been into it before. There was enough to give you an idea of what's been happening, so you're not totally lost, and still, you know, continue things on. So I really enjoyed it.
You wanted to say a couple of things about Haven. You said you gave that a shot.
Oh dear God. yeah, I don't. You know how they, your mom tells you if you don't have anything nice to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's a show that would be great if you're suffering from insomnia, because it would cure it right away. It's just, it is hideously boring, horrendously boring. I have not read the book, The Colorado Kid by Stephen King, that it's based on. I understand from people who have, you'll hate it even more, because the only thing it's really taken is the title. And actually not even that, it's got the Colorado Kid as a plot device in it, but it's clearly not the title anymore. It's so cliched and so predictable. Honestly, if you can't tell what the end of the episode is going to be by 2 minutes into it, then you deserve to be potted and watered. Spectacularly awful, just cliched, predictable, old. The actors in it are, for the most part, really tedious. There's just these two guys who write for the newspaper who are played by interesting character actors, and their characters seem quirky and fun. And I understand they do come from the book, and that's why they're the only ones who are interesting. Everyone else is just so tedious and so horrible. The guy who plays the lead male character, the sheriff's son, it's like he's sleepwalking through the show. You keep thinking, couldn't anybody wake this guy up for his hands? Seriously, it's just completely monotone, dead-eyed. To say it's phoning in a performance would be an insult to telephones.
Wow, that's pretty good. I gotta write that one down.
It got so bad. I decided I'd give it more than, you know, because sometimes pilots can be kind of iffy.
Right.
So I gave it till the second episode, and the second episode managed to be even worse than the first one, and I took it off my DVR. It was not worth wasting my time watching.
I watched the preview and I was like, yeah, that doesn't look interesting. Oh, and then I realized I've been watching Brothers and Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, well, it stems from my West Wing. I was like, ooh, Rob Lowe's in another show. So I decided to check that out. And he's playing almost the same character. It's so weird. But there's a woman in it that I was really not liking, and I realized it's the same actress who's the star of Haven.
Oh, really?
And so I was like, wow, I don't like her on Brothers and Sisters, and now she has her own show. I think we have made it very clear.
Not worth your time.
Thank you. All right, anyone have any final comments, any shows you want to plug, anything like that?
Nope, except just to hope everybody who's going out to Comic-Con in San Diego has a good time.
Oh, you mean like you? Aren't you going out to Comic-Con?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're talking to two people who aren't going.
I know. How very self-serving of you.
Well, no, I just need to say to everybody else.
All right. Oh, yes. I, this year, for the first time since I've been on the West Coast, am not going to Comic-Con this year. And there are tears of sadness. But I'm going to miss everyone because Comic-Con is like my great vacation. I have a really good time every year. Except for the whole sleeping arrangements. I swear one year I'm going to have enough money to get my own room. That's the only thing that I want, to go to Comic-Con and have my own room. Because it's like, it's so crowded all the time. You're there around a million people, and then you go back to your hotel room, and you're still surrounded by a million people.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
it gets to be a little much.
It gets to be a little much, and I have yet to manage to go without having 5 people in my room. I have not had that happen yet. Yeah. So that is one of my goals. I would like to be able to be like one other person and that's it. Like, you know, have the double, like each person has their own bed and that's it. That's what I want. I don't know if that's going to happen because I'm not that rich. But that is my dream Comic-Con experience. But yeah, we're going to have next week. It's going to be part 2 of the West Wing podcast. And then the week after that, I want to do the regular podcast, but I also want to have a couple people who've been to Comic-Con so they can give us the news on Comic-Con. All right. And if you guys have any comments, same as always, hit us up at tvcampfire@gmail.com. And we will talk to you guys next week.